This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for joining us. Zaire Love is a filmmaker, music maker, and writer in Mississippi. In her short documentary film, Trees, her grandmother Dorothy is the star and storyteller.
My eyes have known beauty, and they done seen murder. I've had murder on my hand time and time again. Eyes hung strange fruit, solely cause whose I am. Strong mahogany with deep roots, thick and stout curve, weathering any storm that comes.
Dorothy grew up in Sledge, Mississippi, in the Delta. Both of her parents were sharecroppers, paid cents for picking hundreds of pounds of cotton a day in the 1950s. They raised Dorothy and her 10 siblings in a one-bedroom home. Throughout the film, we hear Dorothy's stories and memories, and we learn how they have shaped her granddaughter Zaire's work as a documentarian who highlights and explores the stories of Southern Black women. Zaire recently graduated from the University of Mississippi in Oxford. She is now the Southern Foodways filmmaker there, and she'll be teaching at the Center for the Study of Southern Culture.
Zaire, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us more about your grandmother.
So my grandmother, her name is Dorothy. I call her Granny. So I'll refer to her as Granny. And she is a native of Sledge, Mississippi, which is in the Mississippi Delta. And in the 1960s, her father, my great-grandfather, set out on foot to Memphis because they were sharecroppers. And this was the last time that the man would deny his family, you know, money to survive. And this is the voyage from the Mississippi Delta to Memphis. And my grandmother is a part of that. Like I said, she's from Sledge, but she calls Memphis her home as well. She's retired. She's beautiful. She's also feisty. She is no nonsense, but she will give you the shirt off her back. And she has a well of stories. And I just really wanted to tap into that because I knew that she was going to be able to provide me with that. And yeah, that's my grandmother.
She tells those stories because she has lived those stories. So many stories of joy and pain as a Black woman of her time.
Yes, yes. And I realized that it's tough, whether the good times or the bad times, because right now, in hindsight, she sees that even in her good times, there was struggle, you know, of her childhood and things of that sort. And I'm learning to be softer when I'm asking her those things, because Trees is a ever evolving piece. So we're still continuing to add on and add on and add on. And I'm just grateful that she's willing.
And all along, you have listened to her and wrote her thoughts into stanzas. And you unfold her story in Trees like a poem.
Yeah, for sure. Because it is poetry. It's poetry.
You also sing.
Yes, I do. Yes. And that's a form of my poetry as well, you know? Writing it and putting a tune to it, for sure.
Tell us more about what you sing and how that weaves with your grandmother and her words and the images that you focus on, the scenes that you depict in this video.
For sure. The opening says, "Southern trees keep on saying, give me your ear, child. We need to talk for a while." And then she begins the poem. And I sang these words because Nina Simone and Southern trees keep on saying, in Trees, the Southern trees are, you know, elder Black women. Give me your ear, child. We need to talk for a while. Because the trees, I wanted it to be like beautiful to your ear, but also on close observation, you actually hear the lyrics of what I'm saying and how they do weave together and how that is the root. And then you got the tree and the leaves and the branches and things of that sort, as far as the words in which we make it up. But I just think that me singing those words are powerful and that it moves people. And the words that my grandmother speaks, like, really, like, pushes it in, you know? And so that's the reason why I do sing, because it does perk people up as to, oh, what am I hearing? And then it allows them to be more receptive to, like, the spoken word. So I think that's the reason why I do it. But I also love to sing. I also love to use that gift, for sure.
And you call this video Trees. You talk about trees. You show trees, not only in and of themselves, but how they represent many things, particularly for the Black experience, particularly in the South.
Yeah, because, I mean, it has so many meanings, right? We can go down several, like, roads and paths as to why, like, the trees are important. We know that the trees know the beauty and the terror of this land when it comes to the South, when it comes to Black folks in the South. When you think of tree and a Black person, and in that time, you think of lynchings, you think of mobs, you think of all of these heinous crimes that happen. But then you also think about, like, man, if these trees could talk, what conversations will they tell us that were had underneath them? You know, like, what would they tell of the body that hung, the strange fruit that hung from, you know, their branches, their limbs, you know? And what wisdom, what would they tell us? And I really wanted to use it as to the Black woman, because the elder Black woman in particular, because they have seen a lot. They have endured a lot. They've heard things and they've experienced things that we probably could never imagine. And they often keep it to themselves because the trauma can be hard to bear. But if you sit at their feet for long enough time where they feel comfortable that they can share their fruit, they will. And you'll hear the beauty and the terror of the land or the life or the experiences that they've had.
Your grandmother not only tells her story, but she carries the stories of her mother.
Yes. Yes. My granny's mother is Maylee Patton Presley, and she's from Sledge. I would say she's from Sledge. She's around the Mississippi Delta, her and her family. And she is actually the catalyst to me being an artist that wants to honor, amplify, and archive the stories of the Black South. The stories that my granny tells me about my great-grandmother, we call her Maylee, about Maylee, really sparked my interest, really made me feel like, oh, the narrative that was told to me before seems like it's not super true if these stories are happening. One being that in one of the grocery stores, a white woman, a pregnant white woman, while my great grandmother was pregnant too, you know, skipped her, shoved her, called her the N-word. And my grandmother, you know, she did what she had to do. You know, they got into a tussle, you know, they got into a, you know, scuffle, if you will. And of course, the whole town is, Black town is like, get her out of town. You know what can happen. But my grandmother stood, my great grandmother, Maylee, stood at her house on her porch, got her shotgun and said, look, if I don't get them all, I'm gonna take one with me. You get what I'm saying? So it wasn't a flee thing. It was like, I'm staying here because that person was wrong. I'm not seeing her whiteness as a pass. She was wrong, you know? So thinking about how, like, bold and how, like, radical that is in that time, I think my great-grandmother couldn't be the only one. let me dive deep into it. So I know I just went kind of down a rabbit hole and like explaining that, but I did want to like just share that story with you about my great grandmother, in which we call May Lee.
And we should remind people roughly when your great grandmother lived and what was going on around her in the South and in this country.
Mm-hmm. For sure. I think my great grandmother, May Lee, she was born in the 1920s. She was born in the 1920s. And we know, like, we are in Mississippi. We are in the Mississippi Delta. And if you've ever been to the Delta, like you've seen, I mean, yes, it's rich in Black culture, but you've seen the fields. You've seen, like, if you have no car, it feels like you will never escape it. You know, you will never escape it. So just think about that. Cotton fields for miles and miles away, land miles and miles, and you're poor and disenfranchised. There's just a lot that you have to fight against. And just thinking about that and having no rights, honestly, only the right to halfway live and work for nothing, because they were sharecroppers. You know, that was one of the reasons why my great grandfather left on foot, because every year it was just never enough. Picking hundreds of pounds of cotton each day was never enough to satisfy that bill at the end of the year. So just think about that. Like, but still having like the self-dignity, my great grandmother May Lee, to be like, I'm still a person. Like, I'm still worthy. I'm still here. That does not, like, my skin color does not dehumanize me, does not say that I'm less than. See me, I'm here.
You also bring water to this video, and that is another piece of nature with multiple meanings. Tell us more about what you were trying to convey by bringing the water.
Yeah, so one of the end parts is called wade in the water. And we know what wading in the water, as far as like the historical messages, as far as the Black lens, the African-American lens in the, you know, American South is. But to me personally, and for my family, my grandmother, my granny, she talks about how they used to, like, for baptisms, they would go down to the river or the creek, wherever there was a body of water, and they would wear all white and they would be dipped in the water, you know, to be made whole. And I just think that water is such a powerful element for cleansing, to be washed, you know, to kind of release yourself from that heaviness. And so that's why I wanted to use that. And also, like, me using it as a symbol, like, each one of my grandmother's children that are alive were dipped in this kind of metaphoric water, so that not only is my grandmother, like, saying that, hey, I've done this, but I can do this for my children, and they can do this for their children and their children and their children, that we don't have to carry the burden of all of that trauma, but we can learn from it in a way so that cycle does not continue on.
The spirit of baptism, the spirit of cleansing, the spirit of being born again.
Yes.
You are from this area of the country. You have studied in this area of the country. You have chosen to make it home. Did you ever wrestle with the option, should I escape too?
Yes. And to a degree, I did. So when I graduated from high school, I went to Atlanta, to Spelman College, and I studied theater as far as a writer. Then I went to Houston and I worked there. And I came back to Atlanta. And so those were like still Southern, but still feeling like very different and miles away from this place called Memphis and this place called Mississippi, the Northern Mississippi, much different environments, you know? And so I felt like I did in a sense, but there was a calling back to me like, hey, we need you, come. Come. And, you know, as it be, I ended up on the website of the University of Mississippi and I saw the documentary expression program and I said, oh, this is me. This is me. And when I set my feet on, you know, in Mississippi to like live, like that's where I said, you know, and I tell a lot of people, I did not know that I needed Mississippi the way I did, because it has informed the work that I do and in my life's work, as well as Memphis, you know? So I feel like they're one and the same. When I say Mississippi, I mean Memphis. And when I mean Memphis, I mean Mississippi. So in a way, I have escaped, but you can't do it for long. I couldn't do it for long.
You've produced this video and you have shared it. Are you already thinking about where your calling may take you next?
No, I'm not. I feel like my head is down in, like I said, always honoring, amplifying, and archiving the stories of the Black South. So I'm just going with the flow, but the flow has been keeping me quite busy, if I must say. In addition to trees, I'm going to be working on a short film called Slice, and it's about the Black culture, Black swim culture here in Memphis. And that has been picked up or like supported by Hulu with a substantial monetary prize and mentorship and eventually like a great visibility for the film. And so I just think that although I wasn't thinking about like what's next, it's just that I'm always in pursuit of telling the story. And I've realized that in my pursuit of telling the story, things begin to just unfold. And so I just wait till they unfold. I'm not always like thinking ahead, shoot, I don't know what I'm doing tomorrow. Well, just a little bit. Oh, yeah. So that's kind of how I've been like living life for sure.
For people who want to keep up online with whatever you do next and whenever you do it and however you do it, where can they go online?
For sure. They can go to my social media. Instagram is Zyear, Zy_YEAR. That's me on Twitter too. I'm going to get much better at Twitter. So please, so if you want to, you know, start to know some of my thoughts, I'll be on Twitter as well. I also have a website. It's zyearlove.com. That's ZAIRELOVE.com. And so they can really get to know me on social media and on my website. And if they even want to like interact with me even the more, on my website has my email address. So feel free to shoot me an email.
All right. Zyear, thanks so much.
Thank you.
This weekend, the Spring Garden Festival returns to Chattanooga. The Master Gardeners of Hamilton County, along with the University of Tennessee Extension, will present the outdoor festival on Saturday starting at 10 a.m. around the Hamilton County Extension Ag Center and Bonnie Oaks Arboretum. Proceeds will help fund scholarships and community grants. Suzanne Ford is the current president of the Master Gardeners, and Carlton Mathis is a member.
Every year we put on an annual expo at the Camp Jordan Arena that the Master Gardeners were not able to organize this year owing to uncertainties, but we pulled ourselves together and decided that outdoors in May would be the perfect time to have a spring garden festival. People are still planting. People are still looking for things to learn and to do. And so May 15th at the Ag Center off of Bonnie Oaks Drive, the Master Gardeners and some vendors will be there to welcome the public live and in person for some education, fun, and purchasing.
And Carlton, you've been involved with Master Gardeners for a decade now.
That's correct. What I'm responsible for on the festival is the setup of the site. We have 16 demonstration booths who have set up. The topics range from composting, raised beds, straw bale gardening, pollinators, bluebirds. It goes on and on. And then we have 15 vendors who are providing landscaping and gardening related things to buy to support the festival.
What are some of the topics that you have been hearing from master gardeners leading up to the expo?
People started gardening during this past year when we were all at home. Suddenly people turned to their own spaces. We get a lot of questions about vegetables. We do get questions about composting and mulching, how to protect. I know that when a plant gets a disease, master gardeners have a hotline that people can call or email. They can send us pictures. So it's usually, what is this on my zucchini plant? Or why is this wilting? Or what's on my tree? Things to do with survival of whatever it is you put in the ground. And we offer encouragement. So I think those are among the questions that people ask us. A lot about vegetables. What do you think, Carlton?
Another line of questioning, you know, due to the tornado last year, a lot of people asking pruning questions, how to reestablish trees. There's a lot of people in East Brainerd area in Collegedale that used to be shade gardeners. Now, because of the trees were removed, they're in full sun. So it's a whole different way of gardening for a lot of people. And a lot of people they're not familiar with, especially the people new to gardening, they're not familiar with the time cycle of gardening. But after Mother's Day, you're pretty much free to plant any sun-loving vegetable or plant you want. April 15th is our typical last frost date, you know, historically. So if you go past April 15th in the May and Mother's Day, then the weather should warm up. And the key is not necessarily the weather, but the ground temperature. So after Mother's Day, the ground temperature starts warming up. And once the ground warms up, all your sun-loving plants and vegetables, they'll do a lot better.
What are you planting now or looking forward to planting soon?
Well, I always recommend everybody plant tomatoes. Black cherry, it's an heirloom black cherry tomato plant. And because of my recommendation alone, those plants are hard to find this year. But if you find some black cherry tomatoes, you'll be well pleased. They produce well. They produce about quarter size dark purplish reddish tomatoes that are super sweet. I like to call it a gateway vegetable for kids that don't like vegetables. You know, you give them a black cherry tomato and they'll change their mind. Another variety of tomatoes I like to recommend is the Cherokee Purple. That's another heirloom. It's an ugly, ugly fruit, but the taste and texture is superb. They're great on sandwiches or, you know, a lot of people eat, you know, mayonnaise and tomato sandwiches here in the South. So that's an excellent tomato for that. But I tend to tell people when I recommend things to the garden is to grow things that you would normally go to Walmart and public produce section and buy. You know, green beans, squash, zucchini, cucumbers, all those grow well in this area. And even the beginning gardener can be very successful. One thing people tend to do is plant things, you know, too close together, plant too many. One zucchini plant will give you enough zucchini for your entire neighborhood. So don't overdo zucchini.
I am putting in some tomatoes. I'm paying attention to the people who know how to grow vegetables better than I do. I do a lot of more planting in my boxes along my deck. That would be pollinators. I look to attract hummingbirds, bees, butterflies, and I have a lot of native plants. I have some native honeysuckle that is a definite hummingbird magnet. And I think a lot of master gardeners we're all interested in saving pollinators. So along with things that you can grow, I've been growing some tomatoes in containers, but I'm looking to plant some more plants to attract butterflies. Certain plants attract specific butterflies. And I've also let my lawn get a little unkempt in the back, not in the front. In the spring, this is actually a good thing because the bees are out there looking for nectar and the normal spring plants aren't necessarily out yet. So if they have something in the lawn that they can feed off of, that helps. And I think we're all trying to create, as our area is becoming so developed, those open areas that provide shelter and food for the wildlife are becoming scarce. So it's really important for the homeowners to try to recreate that area as much as possible. I'm not saying attract a colony of raccoons, but provide shelter for birds, bluebirds. That's something that the master gardeners are working on. Carlton makes beautiful bluebird houses. So I think that's something that we should all think about, planting for attracting bees, butterflies, hummingbirds, and other wildlife.
A lot of the school kids are learning things in relation to the pollinator gardens and native planting. Suzanne mentioned her backyard, and one of the things that really, really gets bees going this year is clover. You know, we will go to a vendor's booth and buy honey made from the clover, but then in our yards, we put down weed and feed that kills the clover. So you have to decide which end of the fence you're going to be on. If you can have a little messier yard, but have it more natural, that's better for the environment.
And where can people go online for more information?
Our website is www.mghc.org, and it is comprehensive. You can find everything gardening and about the Master Gardeners.
All right. Suzanne, Carlton, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to Scenic Roots. More in a moment.
This is Scenic Roots. This afternoon, we have a set featuring the Knoxville-based saxophonist Will Boyd with bassist David Becker in a virtual show from Barking Legs Theatre on March 17th.
Thank you. Thank you very much to the people out there online. Once again, my name is Will Boyd on the Barry Sax. This is probably my first extended Barry Sax gig I've done ever. And joining me is Mr. David Becker on upright bass. We are hailing from Knoxville, Tennessee. Really happy to be here with you. And this first tune that we did should be fairly familiar for everybody, at least the Generation Xers on up. You know, this is Hello, not Adele's Hello, but Lionel Richie. And right now we're going to do a jazz standard by Charlie Parker called Donnelly. Thank you. Yes, Charlie Parker's Donna Lee. And next we're going to do, an arrangement of a spiritual called a Deep River that I've did on my latest recording, which I have with me today, if anyone's interested. It's called Freedom Soul Jazz. I have actually two albums out right now, Freedom Soul Jazz and this one, live at the Red Piano Lounge. And I have a third one that'll be coming out probably this summer or this fall called Soulful Noise, if you're interested in getting it. And you can look at my website at willboydonsax.com. And if you guys are like what you're hearing from the sounds we're making today, you can also tip us at Venmo. You can just go William-Boy-60, William-Boy-60 on Venmo. Right now, we're going to get into Deep River. Thank you. Take a minute to catch my breath. Once again, Dave Becker on that excellent bass playing and solo. I'd like to thank Barking Legs for having us here, if I haven't done it yet. Really appreciate it. This is fun stuff, and it's always great to keep live jazz going as much as we can, especially during these times. Let's see. The next tune, I'm not going to introduce it per se. We're just going to play it. And I'm sure most of you will kind of peg what it is.
I think. This is going to be interesting.
Thank you.
All right. If you guessed John Denver, you are correct.
Another round of applause for Will Boyd and Dave Becker. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. We did it, Will. Good show.
That's time to crash, man. Saxophonist Will Boyd with bassist David Becker in Barking Legs on March 17th. Video of their performance is on the Barking Legs Wednesday Night Jazz Facebook page on listener-supported public radio. This is Scenic Roots.
I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for listening to Scenic Roots. We come to you from WUTC at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Email us at scenicroots423@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at scenicroots423. Listen to us online anytime at WUTC.org and the WUTC app. For Richard Winham and the rest of our team, join us again next time for Scenic Roots.